What's up, everyone? To episode, technically episode 10 now of Crosstown Chatter. We did have some technical issues last week with the recording that we just could not figure out for the life of us. Some updates here for the Crosstown Chatter podcast. We are going to be going strictly to audio only for the foreseeable future. There's just a lot of things we don't have down yet to be able to deliver quality content on YouTube. So we're going to halt that for a bit. Maybe indefinitely, maybe not. We'll see where it goes. But just wanted to let the viewers know that we'll be primarily audio from here on out. And speaking of issues, I wanted to segue that into the Cubs bullpen issues. Colin, I don't know if you've seen, it feels like one game a series, the Cubs just find a way to blow a game in the eighth or ninth. And whether they actually come back and win it or whether they blow it, it's starting to make me lose even more of my hair. Which is pissing me off because this team could easily be 17-5 right now. And one of the best records in the MLB, they've blown Albert Auzolay has four blown saves, and I don't even think that's including the 8-0 comeback loss against the Padres we had. So good that we're still winning in this way, but in terms of the bullpen, man, I am just losing my mind. I think Albert, he needs to reset. I think Albert Auzolay, he'll be able to bounce back. I'm not worried where he's like, oh, he's not a usable reliever. He is. He's just giving up too many long balls. I believe he's giving up 3 ninth run home runs to either tie or take the lead. So that's not great, especially when you're, you know, he blew three saves all of last year. So just bullpen woes, man, they're starting to piss me off a little. To say the least. The good news is that Jameson Taillon came back. He made a great start, in my opinion. I think it was five innings pitched, one earned run, and I think four or five strikeouts. I don't have the line in front of me. And that's exactly what we want from the guy we're paying $16 million a year. You know, it solidifies the bullpen. It now lets what I'm assuming Ben Brown, because that's exactly what happened this weekend, go into more of a swing role or a reliever role, which I think helps the team get that much better. Because Ben Brown out of the relief roles is just going to be, especially when he can give you 3-4 innings because he is ramped up, or he can even give you more if someone has a really bad start and they get pulled in the third or the fourth. But he did great yesterday in relief. He came in, I think he threw 2 scoreless, 3 strikeouts. That curveball, what we were talking about, Colin, is just absolutely disgusting. What are your thoughts on the Cubs bullpen and Ben Brown and Taillon?
Well, you know, it definitely could be worse. I think you could have a more sticky situation. You guys are still winning ball games, but as far as Ben Brown, I actually got the luxury to go to the game last night. It was a little bit cold. So the bats weren't as alive as they definitely will be later in the season. But Ben Brown, I really like what I'm seeing out of him. He's got decent command. His fastball it looks like it's straight, but it's got a lot of movement to it, and it's coming at you quick. I think I told you, I was watching him warm up, and the curveball is nasty, but if you left it up, I do believe that, you know, on a good day, that ball can get sent. However, his fastball, curveball, and changeup all working is a scary sight.
Yeah, if he can, you know, pick up a third pitch that he uses just as regularly as his fastball and curveball, man, we're not just looking at a dominant reliever. We might be looking at a dominant starter if he picks up that third pitch.
Potentially. I don't know. I feel like You kind of want a guy, especially in your rotation now that Taillon's back, you want a guy that could sit in the middle and eat up a couple innings, especially if, you know, Shota gets knocked around sometimes like he did. I mean, the only guy that hit him hard was Josh Bell. That ball was gone. But everyone else I've seen was rolling over. A lot of balls hit to the left side. Still another great outing from Shota. I think, you know, he's probably one of your, I wouldn't say dark horses now, because he's just been lights out, especially his first 3 starts. And
through 4, I think he's 0.84 ERA, 21.2 two innings and 21 strikeouts. I mean, I don't think you could have asked for a better start to an MLB career than what, especially for what, $10 million a year, $12 million a year, whatever. Like, yeah. He's making like fifth starter money. So, I mean, like, it's the value there is, I think he's at one war already.
And with Tyone and Steele out, like, he was really picking up the slack, you know, keeping
and with Hendricks struggling, wins. We needed him. We needed him to be shut down. So now that's going to bring me to my next topic, still on pitching in the Cubs, Hendricks.
Yeah.
Shout out to Sean.
You know, it's
shout out to Sean. Yeah. He told me a couple weeks ago or before the season started, he said, I don't think Hendricks is the guy this year. And I was like, are you nuts? He had a 3.7 ERA. Came off an injury, did well, and I was like, I think he's going to do fine. And, man, he's struggled in every single one of his starts. He was looking better today and just gave up that fourth inning. It's like he can't get through the order twice now. And that was his whole, you know, why he was so efficient back in the day. If you're the Cubs, what do you do here?
Well, and honestly, I think this is – an example of analytics getting an edge on baseball itself. Like, Hendricks has been in the league for quite some time, and there's a ton of video and analytics just on Hendricks alone. So, like, you're going up and you already know exactly what pitches he's going to throw, you know, where they move, and, you know, seeing it firsthand is one thing. And then you get to that next at bat, the second at bat, third at bat, sometimes, like, these guys are seeing you. You know, whereas you got a lot of new guys on your team, which is helping a lot. Shota is, I know I keep bringing up Shota, but he's very new, very different style of pitching than a lot of these guys are used to. Mm-hmm. But Hendricks is a very, I would honestly say, cookie cutter pitcher. You know,
his whole spiel, or not spiel, but his whole reason for his success. I think the hardest he's ever thrown in a season is like maybe 90 miles per hour on his fastball, maybe. But he was so good because he had that elite command, and he knew. Now he doesn't have that. His velocity is still there. His pitch types are still there. His stuff is still there, but now he doesn't have his command. I saw today he was leaving a lot of high fastballs, a lot of high changeups, and they were just fucking poking him for singles, poking him for doubles. He got one hit 460 fucking feet today. Just shit on.
Yeah.
The minute it came off the bat, you're like, "Is that even, that's going to leave the stadium?" And it might have.
But is what's his walks at?
His walks
are walking
fine.
A lot of guys.
No, walks are around. I think they're a little higher than his career. But he never had a high walk rate. So, like, adjusted to the league, it's probably below average for him. It's high.
Okay, because I was going to say, you know, when they start squaring balls up and you have that extra guy on base, that's not helping your ERA, and that's going to get you out of games a lot quicker too.
When you don't have your command, especially when you're throwing 89 miles an hour on average, it's fucking batting practice.
Yeah.
Like, it's literally what it is. It's batting practice.
Right.
Like, Shota has enough. I don't know if you saw the meme yesterday. He didn't locate a pitch, his four-seam fastball, where he wanted it, I believe, and left it up. And he still got the strikeout, and he was just like, looked up, he was like, thank God. But he has such filthy stuff that he can kind of, like, you know, like the pitchers that have higher velocity, that have more movement, they can get away with having a little less command. Hendricks just is not one of those guys. And now it begs the question, do you do a phantom IL stint, see if you can correct it, and put, like, you got Tyone back, I get it, you don't probably want to lose another starting pitcher, especially to the phantom IL, to make let him work shit out. But I feel like every fifth day, we're just in line to lose because we're not getting competitive starts. It's not even like, oh, he's giving up five runs, but he's going six, seven innings. He's giving up five plus runs, but only going three, four innings. He's and then we're hurting the bullpen on top of that. That's why I hate this. And it's like, I almost just be like, I want to just be like, hey, Ben Brown, start till Steele gets back. Another, what, 3 weeks, a month maybe? Let him start. Let him do that and just see where it goes.
Yeah. I mean, I think it might be a little early to do something as far as, like, total position changes and rotation changes for Hendricks. I mean, he is a veteran, and mean, he's at the number five spot in the rotation. So I think just based on what you have right now and where your bullpen's at, I don't think you want to go and change what the rotation looks like just yet. I think, it, you know, towards the end of the season, maybe playoff contention, that's when you have to really look at things and be like, okay, how has this guy done? And now you have a larger sample size to choose from. You never know where he can go from here. He is a veteran. He can always turn it around. But with that said, he's not the elite pitcher that the Cubs really need right now. I do think that they could have a better record than they do right now, which right now, what do they have, 13 wins?
Yeah, 13-9, which is great. It's fantastic, especially with the players they have out. But, like, here's my thing with that, though. Like, why not let – like, okay, you put them on the Phantom IL. I think there's a 10-day IL. Now they it used to be 7, now it's 10, and they got a 15 and a 60, right? Put Hendricks on the 10-day IL, retroact it from, let's say, what, today, or you could do it tomorrow or whenever, and give Ben Brown an extra 2 starts, right? Because I get what you're saying. Like, you don't want to take away from the bullpen now. Like, it could get dicey. You want a bigger sample size with Hendricks. But – and I get wanting to wait till you get a bigger picture. But, like, as we saw last year with the Cubs when they missed the playoffs by one game – these games matter just as much as the games in September. So, like, if you have a pitcher who every you know, 20% of the games is not giving your team a chance to win ball games, and not even win ball games, but, like, just protect the bullpen, like, just go deep into games. Like, that's all. If he wants to put up a 5 ERA, but he wants to pitch 6 innings every time, fine. But, like, you can't give up a bunch of runs and not go deep into a game. So, like, I think – If I'm counsel, and Jed Hoyer, I'm really thinking, man, let Ben Brown go out there. We know he can get us at least 5 innings. Might not, you know, be perfect every time. He's young, and at least for 2 starts until Hendricks can kind of work out the mechanicals in AAA, do a rehab start, come on back.
I don't hate that, but I just feel like you could also give him a shorter leash right now. And then work in Ben Brown and Luke Little and, you know, a couple other guys, like, have a bullpen day.
What's a shorter leash, though? Like, you're just going to have him go out there and pitch 3 innings?
It's not innings-based. I would say it's earned run-based. You know, if your guys are giving up runs and the offense isn't giving you a cushion right away, then you're going to have to do something defensively. That's the way I think of it.
I think of it like, man, if you're giving up 20% of your wins to it, and I'm not saying Hendricks can't bounce back. It's not what I'm getting at. I think he's at a point now. He's had 5 starts. He's at a point now where he needs to reset. Is he at 5? Yeah, I think he's at 5 starts. Yeah, he needs to reset one way or another. He's not going to be effective out of the bullpen, so that's not an option. That's just the reality of it. You have enough guys in the bullpen where if you're just letting him go, like, let him piggyback. Hendricks, you got the first 4, take care of it. Ben Brown, you take the next 4. Whatever that looks like, right? Now that you have Tyone in there, I think that might be better. Like, hey, Hendricks, give it your all now because you're only going to go 4 innings today, and then we're going to hand it to Ben Brown. So it's like, you know, like, it's like when they say when starters convert to relievers, they, like, gain a little bit on their fastball, their stuff, because they're able to go all out because they're not worried about pitching, you know, 6-7 innings, 80-plus pitches. So maybe that's an option.
Yeah.
I don't know. And it's hard because it's Kyle Hendricks. You know, he was a staple in the rotation for the last 10 years. He started Game 7 of the World Series. He's a Cubs legend, in my opinion. A great veteran to have in the clubhouse, but I think that'll be interesting thing to watch the next couple of weeks because I think, especially on, you know, if, no offense, if this is the White Sox, you'd be like, all right, let's just see what we can do. Right. Cause you're, you know,
oh yeah.
You know, but like this,
no, it definitely depends on the position of the team.
But this is a team with playoff aspirations. So it's like, you gotta do something. You gave them
and
5 starts to figure it out. Now it's maybe, hey, let's make some adjustments.
Potentially. I definitely think they might do something. I don't think they'll do anything too drastic to start off.
No.
I just don't think that's the way counsel is going to operate this situation. But like I said, something definitely might happen. Might have to move some stuff around. And when your team is performing at an elite level or trying to and getting to the playoffs, then there's really no sympathy for how long you've been on a team, right? It's all performance based, and it's nothing personal, really. It's just you want to see this guy succeed. You're going to try and put him in a position where he can, but at the end of the day, if he's not getting any wins, then yeah, you might need to look at something.
I'll tell you this, my last thing on this subject is, you know, he has some leeway, but when Steele comes back, he's going to be put to the flames. He is probably going to face the fire, because if he's still not performing in 3 weeks and Steele comes back and all of a sudden it's like, well, we got Steele, Shota, Tyone, Javier Assad, Ben Brown. I'm missing a person. I can't even tell you who I'm missing right now. Jordan Wicks. Mm-hmm. Got Cade Horton coming up in the minors. All of a sudden it's like, shit, like we're going to throw the best five out there we think and win ballgames.
Yeah, it'll be a little bit more sink or swim when it gets to that point in a few weeks. But as far as, you know, that's the pitching goes and defense a little bit. But what about your offense? Offense has got to be cooking.
I love the offense right now, especially because we don't have Seiya. Probably outside of Michael Bush, probably the MVP of hitting. Of a hitter on our team. Morel's struggling, but the peripherals still look good. He's still not chasing as much. He's taking his walks, which is huge. He's making hard contact. I think, you know, if you look at his stats right now, you go, oh, shit, it does not look good. And he's always been streaky. So to me, I'm just like, the bat's too good when he's hot to not have in there. In a month or a couple, even if within the next week or two, he could be hitting 300 with a fucking 900 OPS. He's just got that much power in his bat and that much contact. Nico Horner, star.
Nico
last
Horner.
Last 2 weeks, he's just been tearing the ball off the cover. Doubles galore, singles galore, clutch hits. He had 3 hits today, I believe, maybe even a 4th. I didn't watch the rest of the game. He brought his batting at, like, his if you go back to, what was it, April? I think I sent you that tweet. Let's see. I'm going to actually read it off, and this is a couple days outdated. But if you go back to April 13th, he was slashing .171 batting average, a .352 on base, which actually is not bad, and then a .195 slugging for 77 WRC+, which means he was hitting 23% worse than league average out of all the hitters in MLB. On April 19th, a couple days ago, he got that. He went on such a hot stretch. He got that lineup to .271 batting average, a .397 on base, and a .373 slug for a .123 WRC plus, 23% better than league average. And that's actually even higher today because he's had a couple good games the last 2 days. Nico and Cody Bellinger have been turning it up. I love it. They're starting to get back up there. Unfortunately, Ian Happ did indeed get hurt. He's not on the IL. It looks like they're giving him a couple days of rest, so that's fine. But man, not having Seiya, not having Ian Happ, and then you throw that on top of not having Julian Merriweather, one of our best relievers, and Justin Steele, it definitely hurts. So with the offense as a whole, man, Mike, I know we talked about it in our Phantom episode that never came out. Michael Bush, 5 home runs in 5 games. I think he's at like 15 or 16 RBIs already, somewhere around there. As a rookie, you traded a decent package for him, but man, I'm just loving what I'm seeing out of that first baseman. He's probably came within probably within 10 feet of a home run the last like 4 or 5 games too. Like he's barreled up some balls. Today he hit one with a .720 expected batting average to dead center. He was like another 10 feet would have been a 3-run homer, probably win the game. But like, and he's 26. It's his rookie season. He's still learning. I know 26 is kind of older for a prospect, but the production we're getting out of first base, I think that's been the biggest thing, because the only production we got out of first base last year was when Cody fucking Bellinger was taken out of center to play first because our first baseman sucked. So I'm loving him. What have you seen? I don't know. I know you've been watching some games. You've been to some games. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah. I don't know if I mentioned this in the last episode or the episode before that. But the Cubs had the highest walk rate as well as the lowest strikeout rate. One thing I did want to look at and see is how many strikeouts Canario had. I was watching him, even in the game before that I went to, I think it was that ninth inning where he needed just a base hit. And even his two strike approach, he was trying to swing for the fences. So yeah, I just feel like if Alexander Canario could have that two strike approach, he'd be a lot more valuable. But as far as like having that home run swing, you got a lot of players that not only do they have that home run power, but they're actually connecting with the ball. Obviously you got Michael Busch mashing baseballs. However, I will say, you know, some of that equates to your strikeout percentage. And like on this team, like I know you don't have that many strikeouts as a whole, but some of the guys, those strikeouts come in crucial moments, like especially Ian Happ. I wanted to see how many strikeouts he had. He's like fourth on your list as far as strikeouts go. Number one is Swanson, which was kind of a shock to me, but it makes sense. He's not.
What's his strikeout rate right now? Do you have that number?
He, I don't know the rate, but he has 23 total strikeouts.
Oh, that's a lot. That's a lot for 20. What was that? 20. See, but Michael, yeah, 25.
Michael
yeah,
Busch
lot.
Has. Michael Busch has 22, and he has played a lot less games. However, he was making contact. So it's all like, if you want to swing for the fences, that's fine. But you gotta be able to perform if you're going to, you know, have that daddy hack.
Well, I think the low strikeout rate, too, is because like Cody Bellinger has not been striking out at all. Nico Hoerner, outside of his first couple games, has not been striking out at all. So, I mean, like those numbers as a team, I don't think you have many guys nearing a 30K strikeout rate. Maybe Morel,
no.
Probably Dansby. I think Busch, I checked it like 2 days ago or a day ago. It was like 26-27%, which is above league average. But again, it's not like where it gets start getting bad is when you're at that 30%. Like that's the threshold. Like, hey, you're striking out a little too much here. You know, so.
Which is fine, which means you have a very long and powerful swing. And then you look at Busch's slugging percentage and it's well over 600.
Yep.
But I mean, it all depends on like the player and hitter you are. Like, if you look at Magical, he has one strikeout this whole year.
Is he
like,
really?
I think he wants to be at two strikes, and then ends up like having a little base hit.
Nicky, two strikes, man.
He does pop out a little bit, but when you just need a base hit, he's definitely the guy. Him and Nico have been pretty solid.
Damn.
But one thing I did notice is that, like, you know, it is just a gritty team. Like these guys, even though they're down, or if they are down, they'll at least get a guy on, and they've had pretty good success getting them over and getting them in. Something that the White Sox know nothing about. So,
yeah, you got it. Yeah. The situational hitting is, and they've blown a lot of it too. I just feel like the Cubs get away because, man, like they just grind these pitchers down. Like, they do a great job of just, like, taking their walks, fouling off pitches, going, you know, 6, 7, 8 pitches per at-bat. Saw today with Lizardo. Was it Lizardo today or whatever pitcher pitched today on Sunday, the 21st, I think it is. Yeah. They got carved up. I think it was, like, a leadoff double walk, strikeout, something like that. And then, like, the second inning – was a bit longer, and then the third inning was like, holy shit, they just made them feel like 35 pitches this inning. They scored a couple of runs. I think they scored a run, maybe. Like, they're just taking these great ABs where they just wind down the starting pitcher, and that's really where I think they're getting a lot of these wins is they're pulling these pitchers in the fourth, fifth inning, and then they're hitting the bullpen, and then comes the next day, they do the same thing, but now your bullpen's not as strong. You ain't got as many. They had to cover five, six innings, long outings, too. The day before, so now you can kind of wear them down and get out there. So I do like the at-bats. I like the approach a lot better than last year, in my opinion, as a team, right? You had your individuals last year who were good at that, Ian Happ, Nico Hoerner, but now you're starting to see that with players. Christopher Morel is a lot more patient. My biggest worry with him was that he was going to be the next Javi, just swinging at every fucking slider no matter where it lands, can be 6 feet out of the batting, you know, the zone. So
yeah,
collectively as a whole, I'm loving the Cubs offense. And they're pitching, to be honest. Javier Assad, another great start. Gotta give him a quick shout out. Cause I know we spoke about him last week, but just some unexpected, I think we said this two or three podcasts ago. We needed guys to step up, and we're seeing guys step up, and I'm loving that.
Well, yeah, what's helping the Cubs a lot is that they're, like you said, hitting the bullpens of these teams and getting at least one or two runs later in the game. Like if you can score consecutively and not trying to win ball games in one inning or with one swing, some of these guys are trying to win the game with one at bat, and it's not possible. So when you got a couple guys stringing some hits together and getting at least one or two runs, that could be the difference in a lot of these ball games that I've seen this year. There's been some blowouts for sure, but as far as the whole MLB goes, I mean, there's been a lot of very close games, especially games that have gone either way. Like one team's winning at one point in the game, and then, you know, that quickly shifts. You know, you can have those blow up innings, but if you can score throughout the game, that's going to boost your chances immensely.
Have you noticed as well, before we get into the White Sox here, have you noticed there's like not as many shit teams as there used to be? Are you starting to notice that? Or am I just...
There's only a few. Yeah, there used like to be powerhouse teams and then some collective of bad teams. And now there's a lot of winning records out there.
That's what I'm thinking too. Like, there's like, it used to be like you had your top dogs, and those are the guys winning like 100 games. And then you had the next tier that was like 87 to 95 wins, and those were like a handful. And then everybody else fell like either at around 500 or like well below 500. Mm-hmm. But like now I feel like there's only like three bad teams, I think. And that's the Marlins, the White Sox, and the Rockies. The A's are actually holding. Okay, I guess if I'm putting bad teams, the Astros have a shit record right now, but I don't think that holds up.
See, I wanted to bring up the Astros real quick too, because that is an interesting team. Mm-hmm. I think they're losing games because of their pitching, and their pitching used to be like one of the most dominant in the league, and then their hitting actually backed them up as well. And I think as of today, Jeremy Peña is number two. Ranked number two in the league for batting average, and number three is Altuve. So how do you have those two guys at the top of the lineup performing more than, you know, a major league average, well more than a major league average, and you still have a losing record? So there's just a lot of interesting teams going out there right now. And then, you know, I agree, there's not too many, I guess, shit teams, you know.
Yeah, I'm liking it.
Still is shit teams, but no, it's a good thing. It's hard to pick some money lines now.
I love it because, man, it used to be so easy to be like, this team's going to be good. Like, there's some surprise teams this year. Even last year, there were some surprise teams, like the Nationals. Everyone had the Nationals this year, like 2024, like the analysts, like, oh, they're going to suck. And I'm like, I don't think they're going to like be world beaters, but I don't think they're going to be a rollover win. Like, you have all this young talent from that Juan Soto trade that's starting to come up now. CJ Abrams performing. I believe McKenzie.
And they're not giving up a ton of runs.
No, they're doing good. And I'm like, dude, like, this isn't like as bad as like people make it out to be. And like the A's, I thought the A's were going to be shit, to be honest. And they're holding their own.
One thing I will say that might be a contributing factor to that is all the elite pitchers that are out on injured list right now.
That's like, a good connection.
There's so many elite pitchers that have not seen the field this year or pitching. Like Shohei Ohtani, one of the best pitchers in all of baseball, is not pitching this entire year. Like that's taking wins away from the elite Dodgers. You know, now it's creating less of a divide in these divisional matchups.
Yeah, that's a great point. I did not think of that, because you've got so many just dogs. Yeah, on the injuries.
I mean, look at the Rangers.
No, they got
DeGrom. Scherzer gone.
Mally. Is it Mally on that team?
Mally. There's a couple other Dodger pitchers too. Isn't May not pitching right now?
Yeah, Dustin May. Yeah, I think he's out.
Yeah.
And they traded.
I know Gray. Sonny Gray just came back recently.
McClanahan on the Rays. He's out.
But like, here's an example of how these pitchers can influence these games. Like, Sonny Gray. He's now on the Cardinals.
Yeah.
I just saw today he had 12 strikeouts.
In today's game?
Against the Brewers.
Didn't they lose, though?
Yeah, I don't think they scored any runs, which is a problem. But, you know, that is something that usually, I will say usually, impacts the games in a positive way for that team.
Damn, he had a fucking day.
Yeah, and they still lost.
Dang. You know, he gave up the two runs, though, with 12 Ks and 6.1. That's impressive. Damn, he's impressive. Balling. He's got one. Wait a minute. Hold on. Damn, he's got a 1.04 ERA through three starts, 17.1. That's fucked, dude. He's old, too. He's like 34.
Yeah.
Shit, but the fucking Cardinals still suck. They're 9-13. That was a fall off I was not expecting with the Cardinals. They signed Wilson Contreras, and all of a sudden, like, and it's also funny, real quick, if you look at all the players they've given up, they're all fucking like,
I know,
really good. Like Rosarena. Mm-hmm. Who's the pitcher? My God. He's like a stud. Alcantara. Patrick fucking Wisdom. I'm missing like so many players, actually. Zach Galen. Like, like they've given up so many good prospects that like if they had them now, like they'd probably still be pretty fucking good. Like, and that's like, you know, that's why when people say like, oh, the Cubs should just trade these prospects, I'm like, man, like, I think for the right deal, you trade them, but not for, like, you lost Alcantara. Was it Alcantara and Rosarena, I think it was.
I think there was a couple other players, too, that were, someone, it was that two players, I can't think of.
Marcelo Ozuna. Ozuna didn't do shit for the Cardinals, yeah. And then his next year on another team, he just took off again. And it was man, but hey, it's the Cardinals. Fuck them. So I'm cool with it. As long as it doesn't happen with the Cubbies.
Yeah, well, I think let me see their division real quick, or your division.
It's competitive. The Brewers are still the fucking Brewers. Reds are okay. Yeah. Pirates are on a hot losing streak, but they started off hot.
Yeah. So, I mean, now if, you know, get those that divide, if St. Louis continues to do bad, Pittsburgh has a couple more slips, and Cincinnati kind of stays at bay a little bit, I think you can beat out the Brewers in this division.
FanDuel has the Cubs as the favorites now to win the division.
I believe it. After these last couple of weeks and staying consistent, I think that makes sense. That definitely makes sense.
Yeah. So let's get into the White Sox. Let's get into the White
Sox. As far as standings go, yeah, the White Sox are none other than last place in the AL Central. Mm. And not only that, last place in the entire league. We are currently 3-18.
Damn.
To begin the season. And not only is that the worst in franchise history, but it is nearing the worst in MLB history. I know we looked up a couple teams before we started recording, and I think was it the in their recent teams too.
The one was like the 2003 Tigers started off like I think it was 3-18 or it was 3-18 or 3-22, and they lost 119 games. So especially when you can't get a top 10 draft pick this year, if you're the fucking White Sox. Losing does not help you. You are going to pick 11th at the lowest or the earliest.
And I tried to explain this to a couple different people, but I couldn't do a good job explaining it. So let me know and the rest of the listeners why the White Sox, even though they will be the worst team this year and have the worst record, why won't they be able to have a higher draft pick this year?
So the CBA in 2022, they renegotiated a bunch of stuff because they wanted to get rid of tanking. Basically, they wanted to get rid of the what's the word I'm looking for? The it starts with an I. I'm blanking. The not initiative. The reason why you tank
incentive.
Yep. Thank you. Words are hard today. the incentive to tank, because tanking realistically is bad for baseball. Even though if you're the Orioles and you tank for six fucking years, now you got a bunch of talent. You don't even know what to do with. So anyways, in the new CBA, they made this stipulation in there basically saying you cannot pick top seven. Oh, sorry. You cannot pick in the top nine of the MLB draft. So basically, hey, if you suck for 3 years in a row, you get penalized. Basically saying you better fucking spend money that third year to be at least try to be competitive, because you cannot pick in the top 10 3 years in a row, or top nine, 3 years in a row. So with the White Sox, I think they're the first team to do it. There might be another team in there as well this year, depending on what happens, which is going to make some other teams that are near the top very happy, because they'll go up a pick. But essentially, if the White Sox do indeed finish last, it's now a lotto, so they could still get screwed. So you get a percentage based on what slot you're in and how bad you were. So I think if you're like the worst team in baseball, you have like a 23.5% chance to get the number one pick.
That's what I thought. Yeah, so, it was around like a 20-something percent chance.
So essentially, because the White Sox already picked in the top nine the last 2 years, they will not be able to do so this year. So the incentive to be this bad gives you no reward whatsoever.
No, and this whole year there's never been that reason to do bad. I think, you know, all this talk about going into this year with a different mindset and trying to change the whole outlook of the team, like, this is not at all, I guess, what they were striving for. I know they were probably projected to sit around like just less than 500, and this is just brutal. I mean, we kind of touched about it a little bit in our last meeting, but Grifol has just been just god awful with this team, and we've seen nothing to prove me otherwise that he should be on this team as of right now. I'm surprised he's not already been fired. I'm sure it has something to do with just making sure Jerry Reinsdorf doesn't lose another $1 million.
Colin, I want to hear you shit on right now. I want you to get angry. I want you to get pissed. I want to see that fandom come out. Shit on Jerry, Pedro, and Getz right now. I want you to shit down their throats. Go. You got 2 minutes. Go. Do it.
I don't want to shit on Getz too much as of right now.
Jerry and Pedro, go.
All right, well, Jerry Reinsdorf and his two teams in Chicago. So you can't put me on the spot like that. So Jerry Reinsdorf with his two fucking teams in this city has done absolutely nothing for the fan base. He doesn't care about the fan base. He actually is happy when no one comes to the fucking games. And that's my most annoying conversation to have with people who root against the White Sox and say, oh, no one goes to your games, your team sucks. It's like, obviously, our team sucks, and why the hell would I want to give Jerry Reinsdorf any of my fucking money, especially now that me and our boy Deshaun try to go to the game. We take the red line down, and as soon as I hop out of the train, I get a notification on Twitter saying that the game has been postponed. It did not even rain in the vicinity when it started game time, and only drizzled for the next hour. And then maybe it wasn't even heavy rain, but it definitely rained that night. And there was no reason why we couldn't play a baseball game. However, my terrible conspiracy theory is that it was $5 Tuesdays and he didn't want to lose out on all that money. So he just postponed the game and they played a doubleheader with no one watching. And I think Jerry was very happy. So as far as Grifol now, I don't understand why we would want to keep him whatsoever. Everything that he said, all of his interviews are just a load of bullshit. He doesn't even know what's coming out of his mouth. He doesn't know what to do with his team. He doesn't know how to put together an actual lineup that could do something, as far as management goes, I don't understand why we're not pulling guys from AAA right now who are doing well, like Danny Mendick, who is a seasoned veteran of MLB, has 5 home runs in 5 games. Not that we're trying to reach the playoffs or anything, but we're not even trying to win baseball games at all. We don't score until the 9th inning sometimes, and a lot of times we don't even score. A lot of these games, we've almost been no hit.
You guys are the first team since 1901, when stats were being held, to be shut out 7 times in your first 20 contests.
And if you look at this lineup, that's literally no surprise. I mean, this offense has been honestly non-existent. It's been the Chicago Gavin Sheetses, because he holds like all the records, all the team records, and his batting average is a whopping 255. I believe at one point we had 7 guys. We might even have more than this right now. But I think at one point we had 7 guys batting below 200 and only 8 guys batting above 200. And obviously no one's batting 300 or above 255.
Maldonado, can you hear me?
Yes.
Did I lose you?
I got you.
Okay. Maldonado is hitting worse, a worse stat line than the pitchers did combined in 2021, the last time pitchers were allowed to hit. He's actually hitting worse than all the pitchers combined did in the NL.
It's so bad.
And you like, and I'm going to call you out a little bit. You said you liked that pick. You said you liked it. You said you liked that signing. And I
said I liked it defensively.
The defensive, yes, value.
But then.
Correct. But I did not think the offense would be
I originally thought that he would be great defensively, and he has been not even good defensively and horrid offensively. This team as a whole offensively is not even bad. There's good, there's mediocre, there's bad, there's 50 miles of shit, and then there's the White Sox. Like, it truly is putrid at this point. We have a run differential of minus 71. We have given up 116 runs and only scored 45. There are individual players who almost have this many RBIs, let alone team runs. So as a collective.
And what was the team runs?
45.
Jesus.
45.
I think we have, I actually think I saw a stat that the Cubs 7, 8, 9 hitters have generated more runs in the entire White Sox offense.
I mean, and it's terrible because at this point, there's not much to say. There's not much that Sox fans even want to watch on TV. Not to mention it's so fucking hard to watch it because of all the TV blackouts and whatnot, but that's a different story.
Well, did you see what happened today? They look like a fucking Little League team out there.
Yeah.
They had a run. They had a guy still second. It was a rundown play to score an extra run. They throw it away. Harper gets the second run, scores. And then all of a sudden this 2-0 lead you guys have because Eloy goes yards gone. Half inning late. It's like, it's the fundamentals. How do you not fucking have the fundamentals down as a MLB baseball
absolutely team? That's a classic first and third play. I mean, teams go over that until they're blue in the face, and we can't make an easy play that should be practiced. And that's another thing. Practice, I have seen the actual, it's been leaked on Twitter that there's been a printout of a certain day's practice, and all of the options to do, including hitting, playing catch, stretching, and working out, all have parentheses saying optional. How can it be optional if we have 3 fucking wins?
The fundamentals win baseball games.
I mean, there's not much that I want to say about this team. I mean, there's no optimism here. I mean, at the first, I want to say 5 weeks of, you know, the beginning of spring training and going into the opening day, I was very optimistic. I was one of the more optimistic Sox fans out there. Not because I had to be, because I wanted to be. I wanted to see change based on last year, and I am seeing change on last year. It's a lot fucking worse. A lot worse. And if this team has more camaraderie than last year, it clearly doesn't mean anything as far as performance goes and production.
Well, here's the thing too, Colin, is that even if it says optional, they're MLBers. They should fucking be out there. Unless you got like, oh, I pulled a fucking something in my arm. I want to, like, I don't want to play catch today. I just want to let it, you know, the optional shouldn't be on there. It should be, this is what you're fucking doing. If you want to go do it, we're all fucking adults here. Go work. And I doubt they fucking do. You're not 3-18 to start the year this fucking bad. I feel like you could throw a fucking AAA team out there and they'd get more wins.
I'll touch on this in a little bit as far as AAA and all of our prospects go. But as far as like guys getting hurt and you not wanting to push it, and there's not a whole lot of depth out there because of our injuries and whatnot. I know Eloy is back, but you still have Yoan Moncada and Luis Robert out, our two stars of the team. Everybody looks towards the athletic training staff, because this is a whole new athletic training staff, and obviously you have to make some changes. Eloy has like 19 injury stints in his career. Like, that's just so many. And everybody looks at the athletic training staff and how you're rehabbing and what you're doing before games to get warmed up. And when you see stretching and weightlifting being optional, it's like, all right, well, now you're not helping yourself out even physically. This is totally different from actually playing the game and, you know, hitting or playing catch or what have you. If you're not getting your body right, how do you expect to stay healthy throughout 162 games out of the season? So you also have to look at the strength and conditioning staff. If we have one, I don't even know who's the head of that. I'm sure it's out there, but
it's optional. They show up.
It's optional.
Everything's optional.
This 2024 season has been optional for the White Sox.
And then I'm starting to think, not to get off of this, but is Crochet a fraud?
No, I don't think he's a fraud.
Is he a fraud?
I think
What would you do if you've – I don't think he is, by the way. I just saw some White Sox fans tweeting that on Twitter, and I was like, you guys are fucking ridiculous. Like, he had one bad start off of three. And I did tell you he was going to get fucking lit up
by Phil. Actually, I wanted to just search up – I saw this one stat about Crochet. In his first four starts, I think – he had the record for most strikeouts by a new starter or something like that. I have to look at that. But yep. So he is performing. He had one bad game. He let up two three-run bombs to Bohm on the Phillies. And so that's gonna affect his ERA a little bit and his stats going forward. But I don't think he's a fraud by any means. I think he had one bad game, and as we know, White Sox fans are a little bit, I guess, they like to exaggerate how things are. But there is no exaggerating 3-18. You know, that's just as bad. And no. As I was going to look that up, though, I just see a post from Sox on 35th that says White Sox are on pace to finish this season 24-138.
I don't think that's – I think they'll cross the 50-win threshold.
I don't. I really don't.
Maybe not 50. I think they'll cross the 40. I think they'll cross the 40. 40-45-win threshold. I think they'll cross that. I also think
– I don't know what I'll do if we finish 24 and 138. I don't know where I'm going to be mentally.
I think you just become a Cubs fan at that point. But I don't know. I think they get a little bit of a boost from their prospects, and I think they end up winning a few. Even the bad teams go on a little winning streak every once in a while. So I think that's plausible. I think 40-45 win threshold, like over, is plausible. It's also plausible that they don't win shit. They don't even cross 30. I mean, you'd have to be really bad and have, like, I'm talking like they trade Crochet, they trade Roberts type. Like, then you got no one on the team. Like, I think that if that were to happen, which it's not, if that were to happen, though, I think that's when you start going, oh, fuck, they're not going to win many more games. For a while.
In this respect, I would be okay with if they did these things to help this team and the next team. I think you want to see what you have when it comes to your prospects, because I think we talked about it the last time. You have Edgar Caro behind home plate, potentially.
And Corey Lee.
Corey Lee as well, who I think can only get better from where he is now.
I think he'll be a good catcher. I think he'll be a real good catcher.
You have Tim Elko that could be first base. Jacob Gonzalez at second base, or Danny Mendick, or Zach Remillard. All three of those players are solid and can do a lot better than Nicky Lopez is offensively. You have Colton Montgomery, a number one prospect at shortstop. Can't wait for him to get up here because Paul DeJong and Braden Shoemaker are not cutting it for me. Brian Ramos is a very exciting player to watch when he comes to third base. I think Yoan Moncada will probably ride the bench if Brian Ramos can do what he's projected to do. Dominic Fletcher can definitely stay in the outfield for me. I don't hate what I see from him defensively. He's got a cannon for an arm. If his bat can come alive, that could help a lot. I would hate to see Robert go because I think these young prospects could keep Luis young for the rest of his career and continue to have these all-star seasons. And then you also can have Oscar Colas. I love him. I don't know why the White Sox hate him.
They despise him. I don't know why he's not called up.
He was a minor league all-star a couple of years ago and did well.
Same with Danny Mendick, though.
Absolutely.
Same with Danny Mendick.
And that's another thing. Danny Mendick can play anywhere you need. So why isn't he on the team right now?
And you got two guys on the injured list. And then, you got nobody's playing. Let him get a fucking shot.
And then you also have a little bit more depth in the outfield as far as prospects go with Zach DeLoach. And then transitioning over to pitching, that could only get better as well with a couple guys like rotating in here. I know Nastrini kind of got lit up today, but I don't see him regressing that much. I think Crochet, you got to keep him. I hope Noah Schultz eventually. He's young, but eventually he'll be in the rotation. Eater, and then Drew Thorpe. I mean, I can't wait to see it. All these prospects come up, and if they don't bring any of these guys up, I don't understand what we're doing. You got to see what you have. And I don't know if I foresee them actually making these adjustments when it comes to the roster and bringing these guys up. I mean, I think our AAA Charlotte Knights could beat whatever lineup Grifol wants to throw out there that day. So it's pitiful to watch.
It is. And like, I don't even, if Crochet's starting and that there's not a Cubs game on, I'll try to watch like his start. But like everyone else, I'm just kind of like, it's not worth my, like, I get it. I'm not a White Sox fan, but like, you know, just for podcast sake, I'm just like, I don't feel like it's a waste of time when you go to watch them now.
Absolutely. And then couple of the guys that we thought would do well, like Mike Soroka, he's given up like over 20 earned runs so far and has like the highest hit average again. It's like, that's our number three right now. I think Eric Fetty's been doing okay, but he's only given up a maybe two or three runs a game on average, and it doesn't matter when you don't score any runs.
Nastrini had a real nice start,
His debut, today, not so much.
Oh, did he pitch again? What did he give up? Oh, that was him that pitched today.
He gave up seven runs today.
I mean, he's young, though, dude. Let me tell you. I don't know if we talked about this last week, the one that didn't air, the one before, but these young guys, man, give them a year or two. That's my go. You know, see what they got, see what they do well, see if they make the in-game and game-to-game adjustments, and let them mold in. Luis Roberts wasn't fucking good his first one, two, 3 years. right? However many years till last year, it really wasn't great. He showed potential, and then all of a sudden he put it all together. So with these young guys, man, you gotta just give them time to develop. But if you're done on that segment, I'd like to, just because we have a few minutes left, and I know we spoke about it last week, I'd like to get to Cubs prospects.
Okay. Yeah, I don't want to talk about my White Sox anymore.
So I talked on all these points last week, but I'm going to rehash it this week because there's some implications that could affect the team and could affect the system. My number one talking point is Jefferson Rojas. Colin, you were there to bear witness when I said I think he'll be a top 20 prospect in all of baseball by next year. This time next year, he'll be a top 20. And ironically, I think a few days later, Baseball America slid him into their top 100 at number 99. But that's how they do it with these until they re-rank all the prospects. They don't re-rank like big jumps or anything like that. They keep it usually until about the All-Star break. They'll do a re-rank, and then at the end of the year, they'll do a re-rank, and then after the offseason, they do another re-rank. So that's just how it goes. Usually after the draft is when the next one will be out. But Jefferson Rojas, I think he's going to be a top 20 prospect all of baseball. He's all of 18 years old and high A. They considered bumping him up all the way to double A. Right now he's riding a 9-game hit streak where he's hitting 17 for 41 with 6 multi-hit games and only 4 strikeouts. Two of which came today. Today's game. He's 18 years old where the average, and he's playing in a league where the average age is 22 years old. That is disgusting. That is a guy. He might be a CJ Abrams. He might be a Julio Rodriguez type player. He might be one of the, a Fernando, like not saying comparison wise, but one of these guys who comes up and makes their debut at 20, 21 years old. And is just absolutely a stud. We have not seen a prospect like this in the Cubs system in a long time. And if he keeps hitting and if he keeps going, I mean, shit, he could be a top five, top 10 in all baseball. Like if he keeps this up, usually with what you see with these young guys, his power doesn't come later. He's hitting the shit out of the ball and there's still room for projection there. So that's the type of shit that gets me excited when you see these young guys. And not just at like the ACL, which is the Arizona Complex League, or the DCL, Dominican Summer League, you know, where they're playing against people like their age range. He's playing against competition 4 years older than him at a level that I think there's like not many 18-year-olds at all, period. I think he might be the only one, maybe another one. So he gets me excited. Matt Shaw is another guy. He's at the time of the podcast last week, I think he was sporting like a 1500 OPS. I don't know what he's sporting now. It's too hard to look up minor league stats. But man, Matt Shaw, with that, how that bat looks, he could be a midseason call-up for the Cubs and looking really good. Same thing with Cade Horton. Cade Horton's just out there dominating. You could tell they have him on a very strict pitch inning limit. I think it's a pitch count limit. I think they're keeping him around 60. And I think he's going to be a guy where come June, you're going to see him out of the bullpen, maybe in the rotation, but I highly doubt they would give him that workload right away. So I think he's going to be like a Justin Steele type where it's like, hey, let's see what you got. Let's see how it plays in the bullpen. And then next year, here's your slot. You're going to slot in the rotation. Similar to what they did with Crochet. Hopefully there's no 2-year long injury in between. But those are the three I really want to talk about. Just briefly do a quick overview. But man, this system is nice. This system we're looking at, I think I counted it yesterday. There was throughout all the different publications, there's been 11 different top one, or sorry, 12 different prospects listed on various top 100 lists across Baseball America, Fangraphs, MLB Pipeline, Kylie McDaniels, Prospectus Live, a couple others. We have 12. That is a deep fucking system. And that's after trading away Zahir Hope and Jackson Ferris, because those would be two guys as well that would have been on there. So, man, like, I've been battling with myself, Colin, because I want the Cubs to make the playoffs, obviously. But there's another side of me, not that I don't want them to make playoffs, but, like, it would almost feel like if they didn't make playoffs this year, it'd be a failure. right? But there's also another part of me that goes, man, like, even if they don't make playoffs, they still have all these players for at least another 2 years, plus all the prospects in double and triple A. And they ranked, actually, MLB came out with a ranking of the top 10 MILB teams, minor league baseball teams, like the top 10 with the most talent. And the Cubs had two. Their double A team was number two overall, just behind the Orioles triple A team, who is just disgusting. And then the Iowa Cubs came in at number, I think it was number eight or number nine. So we have a lot of talent in the upper levels of the minors that will be able to help this team move forward. And it's going to be really fun to see on the current team who stays, who gets traded, who gets DFA'd, what we do. So I just wanted to end my Cubs on that hey, Jefferson Rojas, Cade Horton match. I don't think Jefferson Rojas is going to help the team this year. Probably not next year, maybe. But Matt Shaw and Cade Horton, I would be watching them closely for a midseason call.
I think a lot of MLB teams should be looking at the Cubs farm system. I mean, that's number one in the league, folks, for as far as farm system goes. I know some, like, I guess, lists will have the White Sox at, like, anywhere from number three to five as far as farm systems go, which I don't believe. I think we might be top 10, but it's all about what you can do with it over the years. I think the Cubs plan on being in playoff contention for the next 5 years or so. And whoever is not performing is going to be that next man up, and you're going to have some options. But before we end this podcast, I wanted to end with our weekly segment that we want to try to start doing. Let's do a little bit of dogs of the week. I guess it's been dogs of the last 2 weeks, but I could go first with this shitty White Sox team, because there's not too many people to choose from. But I think the person that I want to pick this week is going to be Michael Kopech. I think he has struggled a little bit as far as a little bit of command goes, but it's not too drastic like we've seen in other years past. In his last seven games, he's only given up four earned runs, and he's pretty much in that relief whenever they need him, and it's a lot because our starters are starting to give up a ton of runs. Our middle relief isn't doing great, and so we want to put Kopech normally towards the end of the game. But he's got 13 strikeouts, and just watching this guy pitch is terrifying. I mean, to step in that box, you know the average pitch is going to be 99 miles an hour or more. Is extremely hard to hit. I think there was he got well into 13 pitches were 100 miles an hour or more in one of his appearances. So I think, you know, since the only person hitting really is Gavin Sheets, I could have gone with him, but he's kind of cooled off a little bit. So I'm going to go with Michael Kopech continuing to have a flamethrower as an arm. Any
honorable mentions in there?
No.
That came close
for
you?
This team has pissed me off to no end. So they barely deserve a dog of the week. And so there will be no honorable mentions for me at this time.
Okay.
And you only get one.
I'm going to throw just you get two. One. No, I'm not going to go into the honorable mentions. Okay, I'm just going to throw the name out. Honorable mention, Michael Bush and Ben Brown, for obvious reasons. And then I think my dog of the week is no other than Nico Horner. I don't think there's, from what he's done, from how he started the year, I'll go over some quick stats here. He's been 14 for 32 in his last games for a .438 batting average, a .455 on base percentage, and a .656 slugging. Good for a 1,011 OPS over the last seven games. So I think Nico deserves the dog of the week this week. Congrats, Nico. You get nothing, just our get bragging rights with your teammates, I guess. But he is by far the dog of the week this week for what he's done for offensively and defensively.
Yeah, I think he'll always be there defensively, but it's nice to see him turn that around.
Yep, and I hope he keeps it going because, man, if he can – man, if he can spot – an over an 800 OPS plus that defense.
I thought he was going to looking at a 6-7 Saturday. I thought he was going to win it for you, but he did not. It was like last inning, and he just needed a little base knock, and I think he hit it to first base. But that's going to happen. But that is it for officially episode 10. Thank you for listening, and sorry about that little delay in posting. But we're back at it. We're back rolling. Cubs are rolling and the White Sox are rolling down a cliff. So,
thanks for listening, everyone.